Well, good morning, church. Man, it's great to see y'all and be here together. And I like Russ said was earlier, just to feel like there's some light at the end of the tunnel, that things are indeed looking up. So thankful for your presence, whether you are here or joining us from the auditorium or joining us from your home. I got excited this morning just thinking about us all being able to gather together again to worship all together in like one physical space. I mean, that's just really exciting to me right now for us to think about doing that once again, and so hopeful about that that possibility coming our way. In the meantime, really thankful for those of you who are able to be in here and in our auditorium, and for those of you at home, we're thankful you're able to join us today online as well. Well, if you've been with us the last few weeks, you know we've been studying through the Beatitudes, and it's just such a powerful lesson. And what keeps hitting me, at least as I'm going through this, is how the values of Jesus, what Jesus says is blessed, how those values run so counter to like the normal values you would expect in our world. You know, the values that maybe nobody even ever says, but you just sort of pick up on it along the way. And what Jesus says is really different than the values we intuit from our society. And this week in particular, we're going to be thinking about what Jesus says about mercy. Now, you don't have to go just real far in our world to find a lack of mercy. Right. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't even have to leave the house to find people who don't have mercy. Not trying to name any names in my household, because that would start with me. But finding unmerciful spirits is not a hard task to do. And in a lot of ways, we feel like, well, that's just what's wrong with our society. That's what's wrong with our world. But in truth, we're not that different in a lot of ways from the world into which Jesus spoke the Beatitudes. And he lived in a largely Roman world. Now, it was Greek, had a lot of Greek culture, but a Roman-dominated world. And in that culture, in that place, in that time, mercy was despised. It was something to be ashamed of. To be merciful was to be weak. I mean, if you expected to be a success in their world, you cannot show mercy. And man, doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, we kind of pride ourselves on being a cutthroat economy. I mean, only the strong survive. Only those who are willing to do whatever it takes to work their way to the top, that's who deserves success, right? So for them and for us, mercy's a weakness. And maybe that's why in Romans chapter 1, when Paul was talking to the church in Rome, he's talking about all the characteristics essentially of a thoroughly degenerate society. If you want to go back and read Romans chapter 1 and the beginning of chapter 2, he starts listing these characteristics of like, this is what you ought to avoid. And as he's going to those, the last one he lists is people who lack mercy. I mean, that's a characteristic of a godless person, is someone who lacks mercy. So today, we live like them. We live in a fallen world surrounded by fallen men and women. And like them, we're by nature, we're pretty selfish and evil. We live in a time, in a place where meekness is called weakness, where kindness is called foolishness. So it should really come as no surprise to us that mercy is still not celebrated. And into our world, Jesus speaks, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Now, let's just pause and look at this, because this one, out of all the Beatitudes, this one kind of makes the most sense to me. Blessed are the merciful, for they're going to obtain mercy. Because when you think about it, if you act kindly towards other people, then others are of course going to act kindly or mercifully towards you, right? I mean, that makes sense. It's like a mercy, please. Give it to me too. It's like the concept of cosmic karma. Wow, I did not think about that when I wrote that down. The concept of cosmic karma. What goes around comes around, we'd say. So if you are merciful, then naturally enough, mercy's going to wind its way back to you. That's what we would kind of think, right? But is that really true? I mean, is it really true that we as humans are more naturally inclined to give mercy to others who are merciful? Because after all, they deserve it, right? People who are merciful, they deserve mercy. So is it true that we're more likely to give them mercy? So you might think so at first glance, but I want you to think for just a sec. Take a step back and think for just a second about who in our world deserves mercy. Who in our world deserves mercy? Maybe it's the merciful, the generous, the kind, the sacrificial. And once you've got that group sort of firmly situated in your mind, I want you to now place alongside it, contrast it with the group of people who need mercy. And because if you're anything like me, that is not the same people. The people who deserve mercy are not the same people who need mercy. Because those who freely give mercy to others, they might deserve mercy, but they're usually not the same people who are standing in desperate need of mercy. And take it a step further, because if we're really honest, we tend to despise the people among us who show mercy to the undeserving. Those people who show mercy to the wrong people. And that is one of the most taboo things you can do, is to show mercy to the wrong group, the wrong person. Think for a moment about the story of Jonah. It's a great story. We love it. Our kids may be even talking about it. I have no idea what they're discussing, but it wouldn't be shocking if you found out your kids came back this morning and they talked about the story of Jonah, right? We love that story in our Bible classes, and virtually every kid can tell you about the great prophet of God who was sent to Nineveh, ran away, and ended up getting swallowed up by a big fish, right, or a whale. Depending on who tells the story and how accurate they are with their Hebrew. And right, they know that story. You, as a result, may have learned that story when you were a kid, and it's just sort of hung around. So just as a refresher, remember, God called Jonah to go and preach a message of repentance to Nineveh, which was the capital city of Assyria. As in Assyria, Israel's hated neighbor. Assyria, who routinely raided the border cities of Israel, and they would ransack everything of value. They'd carry off all the cattle, everything that was worth anything, and then they would carry off the people to be slaves or else just kill them outright. I don't know which was a greater mercy. Right? That's Assyria. Assyria, who, if you actually went to open battle with them and you were captured, it's just kind of unspeakable what they would do to their prisoners of war. It makes everything we've heard about, say, Vietnam or World War II or World War I, most of that pale in comparison to what they would do to prisoners of war. And God says, yeah, I want you to go preach to them. That's the people I want you to go preach to. So Jonah knew, just like you and I know, those people do not deserve mercy. and they don't deserve to repent, and they sure as shooting don't deserve to be forgiven by God. And that was like Jonah's greatest fear. That was his worst nightmare. Because what if he goes and tells them the word of the Lord and they actually listen? That's the biggest fear. What if they listen and God doesn't destroy them? What if Jonah actually plays a role in turning God's wrath away from Nineveh? What if God actually forgives and shows mercy to the undeserving? And just as a side note, Jonah was probably thinking about his own role in the world as well. Because how do you think Jonah's fellow Israelites are going to feel when Jonah gets back home and they find out Nineveh could have been destroyed by God, but Jonah sort of stopped it by working with God? I mean, do you think everybody's going to be like, "Great job, Jonah. We're so happy you saved the Ninevites. Thank goodness you rescued our neighbors from eternal destruction, Jonah. Good job, Jonah." Or how about into the New Testament? When Jesus was given the challenging task of passing judgment, essentially, on this woman who's caught in adultery. It's from John chapter 8, if you want to go back and read the story. The teachers of the law find, and I'm going to use quotation marks here because it's really questionable how they found this woman, but they find a woman who's committed adultery, and they drag her before Jesus so that Jesus could render a judgment. They don't really care about the judgment of Jesus. What they really want him to do is sort of to condemn this woman or condemn himself with his own words. They didn't really care which. They just want Jesus to mess up. But Jesus is having none of it, of course, because he's smarter than the average bear. And rather than hanging this woman or hanging himself with his own words, he hangs her accusers with the words of the law. And Jesus said, "You want to stone her? You stone her. Go right ahead. Just the first person without sin, you throw the first stone. You can go ahead and do that." And in the process of sort of outmaneuvering the teachers of the law, when Jesus says, "Yeah, this woman's done something bad and she deserves punishment. Why don't you do the punishing? You who haven't done something deserving of punishment, you do the punishment." In the process, we see Jesus is showing mercy to another undeserving person. And for that, Jesus' own people despised him. They despised that he showed mercy to the undeserving. Or we could move forward into our more modern world, a couple thousand years ahead of that. At the time, the nation of India was deeply divided in a lot of ways, most especially over the differences in religion between the Hindus and the Muslims was the largest divide, but even the Christians were also caught in this conflict. And Gandhi, who you've probably heard of before, he's pretty famous, he argued as a Hindu that Hindus and Muslims ought to get along. Now, to be fair, his people were largely, the Hindus were mostly the ones being persecuted. Not exclusively, because sometimes Hindus were attacking and killing Muslims as well, but largely they were on the receiving end. Hindus were on the receiving end of the violence. And he's arguing, hey, we ought to get along and work together towards making India a better country for everybody. Hindus and Muslims ought to work together. And so he starts drawing attention, and like tirelessly drawing attention to the people who are suffering in this conflict, and he is fasting. You've probably heard about the fast of Gandhi, where he would go for weeks without eating, and then he would visit the most dangerous or violent regions of conflict. And because he did this, because he called on his fellow Hindus to work with Muslims toward making India better, he was assassinated by a fellow Hindu because he was showing mercy towards Muslims. or even in our own country. Maybe you remember the work of Dr. Martin Luther King. He was killed by a fellow American because he said, hey, all Americans, regardless of your skin color, we ought to work together towards making our country equal for everybody. And that was a concept that was so foreign that he was assassinated for it. And we're pretty familiar with the history of our own country, that it's not shocking, given our country's history with race, that someone would find that offensive, and someone who's white would find that offensive and say, no, you're not equal with us, and assassinate. So that's, given what we understand about our own past, that's not as surprising. But what was surprising when I was started reading about Dr. King's story was that his own rejection among the black community. Because there were those in the black community who could not stomach the idea of showing mercy and even working with the very people who had enslaved and discriminated against and beaten and killed and murdered and raped, and the list goes on and on. How could you work with those people? How could you show mercy to those people? You can never befriend people who hate you. How can you grovel like that before people who have treated you like that? How could you show mercy to those people? And for that, some within the black community called him a traitor and rejected his work outright. Think again about those people that you know who need mercy, but who are undeserving. And now, how do you feel when people show those people mercy? Maybe it's when a criminal, maybe it's a murderer or a thief or a kidnapper or who knows what, when some governor or some president or somebody gives them a pardon. Somebody who has ruined dozens or hundreds of maybe even thousands of lives. How about when an immigrant is given amnesty or is granted asylum when they haven't worked here for years to earn their place? They don't deserve to be here. Maybe it's when a politician for the other party, whatever the other party is to you, someone with whom you vehemently disagree on some issues that are issues that are, you know, really important to you. What about when they are praised or lauded for something good they've done? Do they deserve mercy? Or maybe it's someone you know personally. Let's just bring this on home. Someone who has wronged you beyond the pale. Someone who has hurt you in unimaginable ways. Someone who has left a scar of pain and suffering that winds its way throughout your life. Maybe it's somebody from your childhood. Somebody from a previous relationship. Somebody you were friends with or worked with. Maybe it's somebody in your own family. How can you show those people mercy? Why should you ever show them, the undeserving, such mercy? But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Brothers and sisters, I believe in the Beatitudes when Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. He's talking about the very people who show mercy to the wrong group. When you're merciful to the undeserving, you don't often get mercy. When you take mercy too far, people don't want to show you mercy. When you love or forgive those whom you should not love or forgive, you are not given mercy. But one day, Jesus says, the kingdom of God will be here on earth and among my people who are called by my name. Blessed are those because they will then receive mercy. My prayer for us as a congregation, my prayer for you as a person or as a family, is that we may be actively seeking those to whom mercy is not being given. Not because they deserve it, not because they're good enough, not because they got the right status in society or because everybody approves of them, not because they've been particularly kind to you or you agree with them, but just because they're a fellow broken human being standing in dire need of mercy, and you are going to be bold enough to say, let's demonstrate mercy towards this person. Let's be merciful towards this group. That's my prayer for you, my prayer for us, that we will be that bold church, demonstrating mercy where it's unexpected. Well, may God bless you in the study of His Word this week. And if there's anything we can do to help you, we want you to know the elders are always willing to listen and pray and lead and guide. And we as a congregation want to love and support and help you in any way we can. Just let us know if there's any need with which we can help you. And at this time, we're going to stand and we're going to sing. Tommy.